We're very much in need of shelter in this world. Srila Prabhupada was speaking about how Krishna, is the Supreme Father, and he protects everyone. And he made a profound statement, and he said, but in conditional life, we've given up that protection, and we've taken the protection under Maya instead. And that's a source of great distress, because Maya is known as Durashaya, or bad shelter. And Hare Krishna. By wearing the Lord's garlands, one can conquer the material elements and go back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Sri Uddhava said that. So we're very much in need of shelter in this world. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, over and over again we hear this, but one of the most poetical reminders, padam padam yad vipadam. In the verse from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, samasvitaye parapalava plavam padam punya yasho marari bhavam varir vatsa padam param padam 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 yad vipadam natesham. And it says that one shouldn't take shelter in this material world because there's danger at every step. Every step that we take could be a misstep, could be danger for us. And Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. He mentions how fortunate it is for someone to take the spiritual life, even for a little while, even for a second, when he says, Neha bikramana shosti pratyavayo navidyate solpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. He said there's great fear, actually, in this material existence. It's like an ocean. And bhayat means fear. But he says if someone, even for a tiny fraction of a second, can take to spiritual life, su alpam, he calls it. Alpam means tiny. And su alpam means very, very tiny. But if someone can get, even for a tiny fraction of a second, some connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that person is saved from the most dangerous type of fear, which is losing the opportunity, especially of the human form of life, and falling back down into the swirling ocean of material nature. And we have so much to learn from Prahlad Maharaj. Lord Nrsimhadev appeared because of Prahlad Maharaj. He appeared for Prahlad Maharaj and to protect Prahlad Maharaj and to prove that Prahlad Maharaj's statements were true. And this world we live in is the world of doubt. And that's why it's hard to move. When there's doubt, it's hard to move, isn't it? I mean, if you doubt that the next plane you get on, that the pilot is sane, it'll be very difficult for you to get on, won't it? When you get on, you have some faith. Well, it's United Airlines. They must have trained him. And they must have screened him also. Hopefully he's not crazy. Right? And if you see him and he's got his stripes on and he or she gets on the plane, the pilot, and we have some idea that I can fly on this plane. Otherwise, you'd be very hesitant to get on, right? And similarly, we have, when we're moving about in the world, like I went once to, where was it? Cambodia? Is that where Angkor Wat is? I went to Cambodia. I was all by myself. I had some extra time, so I figured, why not go to Cambodia? And I was in Bangkok, so it didn't take much of a flight. It was about an hour away. Hare Krishna. And I couldn't find anything to eat, not what I considered food anyway, because everything had some additive that was not acceptable to me. Hare Krishna. And so I lived for the next few days without eating practically, because I didn't know what to eat. And I couldn't speak the language, and I couldn't express that this is only what I eat, and does this have something bad in it. So I practically didn't eat, except for some fruits, for a few days. Because I doubted. I didn't have a clear understanding of what was in it, and I couldn't know. It was very difficult. So because of that, I moved with trepidation. And that's the nature of doubt. It suspends our animation. It prevents us from moving freely. But when we have faith, and we understand where we are and who we're with, and we trust them, then we can move freely. That's why it's so nice to be amongst friends and those that we know. We can be ourselves and we can move freely. And if someone, if I go to Acharya's house and he gives me something to eat, I'll just eat it. I may ask what it is, because it may be a Russian dish or something. It's out of curiosity to say what it is, but I'm not thinking in my mind what they put in it. Because I know it's Acharya. I trust him. I have faith. I have love for him. So I know if he gives me something, it's good for me. And living in the material world, Durashraya, bad shelter, it means I don't have that trust. I every step, padam padam yadvi padam, everywhere I step, it's dangerous for me. It could be counterproductive, take me in the wrong direction. And therefore I hold back. And there's also a sadness in the material world. It's a sadness of disconnection from Krishna. Because just as the sun, all shine is sun. Anytime you say shine, anywhere, doesn't matter where it is, shiny car, shiny apple, shiny light bulb, that means sun. Because any shine comes from the sun. Anywhere, shiny light bulb, anything. So similarly, all consciousness comes from Krishna. And when you say consciousness, it means Krishna, because that's where it comes from. And everyone, to some degree or another, is conscious of Krishna. Just to what degree? But when we become disconnected from Krishna, we become not only full of fear, because we don't know how to move, because of bad shelter, because of doubts. We also become sad and morose and feel melancholy due to separation from Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj is showing us, we're following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. He's showing us the way to become safe, where to take shelter in this world, how to move in such a way that we're always connected to Krishna, how to speak, how to live, how to think, how to act, so that we're connected to our original consciousness. In the Bhagavatam, it says that somewhere in this universe, there's an ocean of tears. It's filled up from the crying of all living beings who are living in this world out of separation from Krishna. So, to find our real shelter, to reconnect with Krishna, the source of our consciousness, the source of our happiness, the source of our shininess, Prahlad Maharaj showed us the way, the process. And this is what great devotees do. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yad yad acharati shrestas tatadevi tarojana, that whatever a great person does, common people follow in their footsteps. And in the Bhagavatam, it says, bejare muniyotagre bhagavantam adhoksajam satvam vishudam shemaya kalpante yenutaniha, that the great souls do the right thing. They know they're connected to Krishna. And if we follow them and do what they've done, even if I'm in a very disadvantaged situation, just by following them, I'll come to the highest position. I'll become eligible for everything that they got also. So tonight we're talking about following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. And over the last 2 or 3 weeks, we read together the entire section of Srimad Bhagavatam, which relates the pastime of the appearance of the demons, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaka, who had come from Vaikuntha. They were Jai and Vijay, but they were cursed by the four sages, Sanak, Sanatan, Sanandan, and Sanat Kumar. they had gone to Vaikuntha, and they were blocked by Jai and Vijay, who are doorkeepers in Vaikuntha. And because they were completely equipoised and situated in Brahman realization, they thought this was not appropriate for a spiritual place or for spiritual people, because why make a distinction between who can come in and who can't? And therefore, they said, you don't deserve to be here. And Lord Narayan came to rescue the situation, and he apologized. And the four Kumaras could see that everyone there in Vaikuntha actually was connected to Lord Narayan, who took personal responsibility for what Jai and Vijay had done. But to honor the curse of these four great sages, the Lord arranged that they could come to this world either for a short time as demons or a long time as devotees. So devotees, as Lord Chaitanya says in his Shikshashikam, yugayatam nimishena chakshusha pravishayatam shunyayatam jagatsarvam govinda vedahename, that they feel the Lord's separation to be like 12 years or more. 1 second is like 12 years or more. So they decided to come as demons for a shorter amount of time, for 3 births, rather than 7 births as devotees. And also, the added benefit is there, that Krishna likes to fight sometimes. But in Vaikuntha, there's no one to fight with, because everyone's his devotees. Who can he fight with? Especially in Vaikuntha, they're all worshipping him with great awe and reverence. But he likes to fight. As we can see in this world, people like to fight too, and we're little samples of Krishna. People watch the fights all the time. Fighting, wrestling. So Krishna, that propensity to fight comes from Krishna, and he comes and he fights with his devotees who play like demons. So Jai and Vijay first came to this world as the big demons, Hiranyaka and Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyaka was going all over the universe harassing people, looking for fights. And finally, everyone was so disturbed that the Lord appeared when Brahma was meditating and praying for help. And this is also, this is good advice right from the beginning. How do we manage? If you have to manage something, manage a project, what do? Well, do what Brahma did. He sat down and started to pray like anything. Please help me. Sometimes there's not much else you can do. In fact, there never is much else you can do. Sometimes we think we're doing things, but actually, the real solution, Brahma sat down. He always does that. Even when Lord Krishna appeared, he and demigods went to the shore of the Milk Ocean. They chanted prayers, and they said, please help us. The world's overburdened. We need help. So Brahma was doing the same thing. And Krishna appears in miraculous ways. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoviti tatvata tyakva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti surajana. His appearance in this world is divine. And also, Krishna moves by his own sweet will. He's abhijna and swarat. It means he's completely independent, and all his movements are out of for his own sweet pleasure. So he could do anything he wants and appear any way he wants, and he does. And this time he appeared out of the nostril of Lord Brahma. It almost sounds whimsical. Brahma's meditating and praying for him, and he appears out of his nostril as a hog, and he's flying around as a transcendental Varaha. But that's what he does. And then he expanded in size, and he fought with Hiranyaka, and he killed him. Killed the big demon. Now, that was the brother of Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu was furious that Vishnu had killed his brother. He became so angry. And all of Hiranyaka's family was very disturbed also. He had many sons who were the nephews of Hiranyakashipu, and of course his mother was there, Hiranyaka's mother. So Hiranyakashipu went to the family, and Hiranyakashipu's own mother, Aditi was there. And he spoke transcendental knowledge to them to appease them in the loss of Hiranyaka. Because this is the most trying time for anyone, actually, is when we have to leave the world or someone that we love has to leave the world. I remember when my parents died, I was thinking that this is practically the most drastic thing you can do, is to die. It's completely drastic. You just leave it. I mean, you leave your whole body behind, and you leave everything you've ever collected behind. You leave your family, you leave your name, anything that stuck to you your whole life, everything left. I mean, there's drastic things you can do during this lifetime, but nothing compares to that, to just dropping everything and leaving it behind. So drastic. And for those who are left behind, what can they say? What can anyone say? We see when people pass away, especially in India, it's a more public event, and they take the body on a palanquin around town. And people are very sober and shocked. And they chant, Ram Nam Satya Hai. You know, at that time they realize there's something in this transcendental knowledge. So Hiranyakashipu came to appease his family members. And he spoke to them about how the soul moves from one body to the next. Just the way travelers on the road stop in at an inn to drink water. And they get to know each other for a little while, and then they get up and they go their separate ways. He said, that's the same as our life. Snapshot of our life. Everyone I think is my family member, my friend, my teachers, everyone. I come together. We come together. We talk. We get to know each other. And then we get up and move on to a different location, different destination. We have to. So he said, it's just like that. Why should you lament the loss of your family members? And he said that money, we become attached to money, but after all, it changes hands from one person to the next. You can never keep it. Sometimes one person has it, and then it leaves their hands, and it goes into somebody else's hands from one place to the next to the next. Why become attached? Hiranyakashipu is speaking transcendental knowledge about the soul to his family members, and they were appeased. But actually, Hiranyakashipu was a politician. He actually was very angry at Vishnu, and he only spoke in that way to appease them externally. Within his teaching to his family members, he also told the story of the king of Ushinara named Suyagya, who was a great valorless king. Valorous. A great valorous king who fought on the battlefield to his death. And after the battle had dispersed, all his family members came. All his wives. He had many wives. He was a king. And they all gathered around him and cried. There was his body on the ground, his hair scattered. He had bitten his lip out of courage in the battle as he was fighting and dying. His limbs were broken. He had dust all over him, but he was still very beautiful. He had gems, jewels on his body. And his wives gathered around and they were all crying. And the time to cremate the body is just after the soul leaves the body. Because when you do that, then the soul can move on. It doesn't become attached and want to hover over the body. So normally if someone dies in the afternoon, they'll burn the body before sunset, actually. And there are Vedic rites and times that you're supposed to do that. But these wives, they were hanging on and they wouldn't let anyone take them away, take their husband away. So Yamaraj personally came to teach them. And he appeared in the form of a small boy. And he stood there watching as they were crying. And they asked him, "Who are you?" And he said, "Who are you? And why are you crying?" And they said, "We're crying because our husband has died in this battle, and now we're left alone." And he said, "How is it that he's died?" And we say, "He's gone because he's right there." And they said, "You don't understand, little boy. He's gone." And the boy said, "No, he's not gone. He's right there. Why are you crying?" And they said, no, he's died. Don't you understand he's died?" And he said, "No, but he's right there. The same hands, the same legs, the same eyes, the same nose. He has the same head. He's there." And they said, "No, really, who are you?" And he began telling them about the futility of crying over a dead body. And he told them the story of about two Kalinga birds. They were husband and wife Kalinga birds, and they were in love. And they were raising a family. And one day there was a very cruel hunter in the forest, death personified for the birds. And he came through with special food that the birds were attracted to. And he would lure them into his trap. He had a net. So he'd lure the birds into his net. This is expressed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his bhajan, where he says that we're all caught in this net of Maya, in the snare of Maya. And that day he lured the female bird into his trap. And there she was, caught in the net. And when the male Kalinga bird came back and saw his mate caught in the net, he began to weep. And he thought, "There's my beloved wife, caught within the net. And woe is me, woe is her." And as he was crying, the cruel hunter at a distance, behind a screen, fixed his arrow and shot it and killed the male Kalinga bird. So Yamaraj, in the form of a small boy, was telling him this story that all of us become attached to this body, and we become attached to the bodies of others who we consider to be our relatives. And in the meantime, death is stalking us, and at any second can release his arrow and kill us. So he said, understand the actual position of the soul. That he never mixes with this body. Just as air never mixes with mud or water or anything else. Similarly, the soul is always independent of the body. It never mixes. This was Hiranyakashipu's telling stories about Yamaraj coming to enlighten the residents of Ushinara. Soon afterwards, Hiranyakashipu performed severe austerities. He stood on his toes and raised his hands into the air with a great determination to perform austerity to get power. That's what he wanted. In and of themselves, austerities are not laudable. They're not important, especially if one's aim is to get something. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, first section of the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that one should not perform devotional service to get any material return. The purpose of performing austerities is meant to please Krishna, not for getting something in return. But Hiranyakashipu had a demoniac mentality. He wanted power. So he performed austerities, such severe austerities that had never been seen before, that he stood with his hands in the air, on his toes, for thousands of years, until ants and other insects had come and eaten away his body. And there was simply a soul taking shelter within the bones of the body of Hiranyakashipu. And there was an intense heat coming from the body of Hiranyakashipu that was actually scorching the universe. And at that time, the demigods came to Lord Brahma and they said, "Something's very dangerous here. Please appease Hiranyakashipu." So he came and he asked Hiranyakashipu what he wanted. And what he wanted was implicit in his name. Hiranya means gold and Kashipu means soft bed. So this is the epitome of the mentality of someone who is attached to the material world. They want to be comfortable here. Gold and soft bed. Working hard to make an arrangement to stay in this world and be happy. This is the demoniac mentality. So he asked Brahma for all kinds of boons, among which were that he would not be killed by any animal, because he had already seen his brother. His brother was killed by Varaha, the transcendental hog. So he thought, no animals. Ravana didn't think of that one, because he thought he was so powerful that no animal, why bother talking about humans or animals? And then Ram came in that time with animals, and he came as a human, and he killed Ravana. So this time, Hiranyakashipu said, "No, I don't want to be killed by any animal, and I don't want to be killed by any man." Well, we all know Lord Nrsingadev came as a half-man, half-animal, half-lion, half-man. And he also said, "I don't want to be killed by any weapon." So Lord Nrsingadev didn't use a weapon finally to kill Hiranyakashipu, but he used his nails. And he said, "I don't want to be killed in the morning. I don't want to be killed in the day or the night." But twilight is the weirdest thing. It's neither. It's not day or night. And he said, "I don't want to be killed inside or outside." And Lord Nrsingadev arranged to kill him on the threshold of the house, which is not inside or outside. This is Krishna's expertise. He knows everyone's exact desires. In Bhagavad Gita, he says, "Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishani cha bhutani mam tu veda na kashchana." He says, "I know everything about everyone, everywhere, at all times, but nobody knows me." And he also says in the Bhagavad Gita that the cheaters, I mean, there's a lot of cheaters in the world, especially in some parts of the world, there's more than others, but it's all pervasive anywhere you go. Everyone tries to cheat. I mean, even presenting yourself as the material body, that's a kind of cheating. Fix it up. Yeah, I'm this body. That's me. That's a scam. But Krishna says, "I'm the greatest of all cheaters." Cell phone violation is, you have to buy one Shrisha Upanishad for $5. So check your phones unless you are ready to buy a Shrisha Upanishad. So Krishna knows what's in the heart of every living being. He knows the motive also. He can see the inner motive behind one's activities, why one does something. So Hiranyakashipu tried to cover every single loophole, but Krishna had more and knew exactly how to go around them. So he took the boons and he considered himself to be all-powerful. And for a while he was. In the universe, Hiranyakashipu became so powerful that even the demigods, like Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, did not submit to Hiranyakashipu, but everyone else did. Even Narada Muni came out of offered some supplication before Hiranyakashipu. Of course, we don't know what he had in mind exactly, but he always has some angle. But all the demigods, everyone was subjected to the power of Hiranyakashipu because of his severe austerities and the boons that Lord Brahma had given him. And he terrorized everyone. In fact, later on, Prahlad Maharaj said in his prayers, and this is one of the important lessons as we're following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, a five-year-old boy who was a pure devotee, who appeared in the family of Hiranyakashipu. He was the son of Hiranyakashipu. He said later on, after Hiranyakashipu was killed, that I watched my father go through all this trouble to get control over everything in the universe. He owned everything. He owned everybody, practically. He controlled everything. He had it made from a material point of view. And he said that even when he moved his eyebrow, great demigods would tremble because of his power. He said, but I saw how he lost it in a second. He said, so what use are any kind of opulences in this world to me? This is an important lesson. To remember this, that it can all be taken away at any second. Na prashriyat priyam prapya, nodvijet prapya chapriyam. Stira buddhir asamudho. Yeah, 5th chapter, 20th verse. You know it? Na prashriyat priyam prapya, nodvijet prapya chapriyam. Krishna says in the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that one should be equipoised in this world. In order to be eligible to go back to Godhead, one should be equipoised like this. He says, na prashriyat priyam prapya. Priyam means dear. There are so many things that I consider dear to me in this world because of my conditioning. And there are many things that I consider to be apriyam or not dear. I like this, but I don't like that. I like the heat, but I don't like the cold. It's all relative, heat and cold. When we were just in New Vrindavan, it got freezing cold, but the Canadians were walking around going, this is really warm. Everyone's like, I hate it here. It's so cold. Heat and cold, loss and gain, all the relativities in the material world, they never stop. They're always coming at us. We're always subject to these. So Krishna says, na prashriyat priyam prapya, nodvijet prapya chapriyam, stira buddhira samudo. That you have to keep a steady mind and not be attracted to things that are so-called dear and not be repulsed by things that are not dear. You'd be equal in all those circumstances. And Prahlad Maharaj, we're following in his footsteps. He's our guru. He taught us, look at the world. Look at Hiranyakashipu. He had everything. He had all power. But in a second, he lost it all. So what's the use of it? That's what Prahlad Maharaj said. What is the use of accumulating it? What is the use of trying to hold it? Isn't it a relief? And that's another thing that Prahlad Maharaj said. He said, material life is hard. It's difficult to try to adjust to the, get things that are dear. How many opportunities do we get to actually get something and keep it that's dear to us? How many opportunities? Very few. And when we do get things that are dear to us, then we lose them. And then there's misery because of that. And how often can we actually avoid things that are not dear to us? How successful have we been avoiding situations that are cumbersome, that are hurtful? How successful have we been? About how successful, like on a scale of 1 to 10. 10 being completely successful and 1 being never at all. Have we ever been successful? What would you say? A 1? Okay, so we got a 1 from over here. Let's give her a hand. Because right? That's the answer. That's what Prahlad Maharaj actually says. He says, everyone tries and tries and tries to avoid things that are not dear and to get things that are dear. And has anybody ever been successful? And his answer is no. No one's ever been successful. Everyone tries to get happiness and avoid misery, but you get just the opposite result, he says. So Prahlad Maharaj was the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. Nobody knew that. I mean, it's really hard to see what's going on in this world because we're blind. Umajnanatimadandasya. It's one of the Vedic mantras says, we're born blind. Anda. We can't see what's in front of us. We don't have knowledge. And therefore, we don't know how to act and how to move in this world. So we need to have clear knowledge and understand. So unless we have that, we can't act properly. So when Prahlad Maharaj, when the wife of Hiranyakashipu became pregnant, the demigods assumed that now the biggest demon in the history of the universe is going to be born because it's the offspring of Hiranyakashipu. Because, I mean, it's probably a good bet, right? But when they went to take away the wife of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyakashipu had gone off to perform austerities again. And now his wife was there, and they understood that she was pregnant. So they were going to hold her captive until the son was born and kill him. Because they thought, Hiranyakashipu is the greatest demon we've ever seen. Now his son is going to surpass even that, and we can't take anymore. So at least let's try to stop it here. But while they were taking away the wife of Hiranyakashipu, Narada Muni came and stopped them. And he said, can't take her. And they said, why? She's the wife of Hiranyakashipu, and she's going to give birth to another big demon. And he said, you don't understand. There's actually a saintly devotee within the womb of this woman. And Indra, who had headed the party to take her away, immediately accepted. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is parampara. This is how we get knowledge. We take it from saintly people, from the saintly person. He could understand who was actually within the womb. And when he told Indra and the other demigods, who are after all devotees of the Lord, they accepted because they understood, if Narada says it, I accept. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, this is how you get knowledge. If you speculate and you assume, when you assume, you make an ass of you and me. That's how you spell assume. And that's the nature of this material world. Krishna says, avajananti mam mudha. You become an ass. Because everyone's assuming everything, and they use their own abilities, so-called abilities, to try to figure everything out. But that's not the process. The process is to accept knowledge through parampara, as it's passed down from one spiritual authority to the next. And that's what we're doing. That's why we're following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. He's our guru. And the demigods took it like that, too. If Narada says it, then it's true. So Narada Muni took Hiranyakashipu's wife to his ashram, and he cared for her for the entire time that Prahlad was in the womb. And during that time, as is true with any saintly person, he was constantly speaking about Krishna. And particularly he was instructing Prahlad within the womb, speaking spiritual knowledge for his benefit. And this is another important point. It's as how perceptive the soul is. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Indriyani prayanyahur indriyabhya paramana manasastu parabudhir yo budhe paratastu saha. That lowest of all are the sense objects, above the sense objects are the senses, above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, even more subtle than that is the soul. The soul is so subtle. And how subtle is the intelligence? Look just around at material nature, how subtle it is. If you look at fish swimming in the water, you can see how a school of fish, they can be peacefully sitting in the water feeding. And if you just clap your hand like that up on the bank, it'll take off in a second. They can feel it through their fins. They can feel danger coming from a long way away, just through their fins. They feel the danger in the water, or they hear a sound. And the whole school immediately, in synchronicity, they take off in the water. That's even on a material example, how subtle the apparatus is for a fish. And the soul is the most subtle element, is actually the person, the perceiver, and the most subtle of all within the body. So the soul actually can perceive many, many things, subtle things. And the subtlest of all is the transcendental sound vibration, the poetry of Srimad Bhagavatam, the message from the spiritual world. It's such a subtle vibration, but it has a profound effect. Like a nuclear reaction, it takes place in a subtle way because the atom is so tiny, you can't even see it, it's so subtle. But somehow or other, someone figured out how to split it, apparently. Through using mathematics and physics, they figured out how to break the atom and release the energy within it. So within spiritual sound vibration, Srinvatam Sva Kata Krishna, the kata, that spoken word about Krishna, punya shravana kirtana, punya, you get just from hearing it, just from being in the vicinity when the kata is going on, even if you're an innocent bystander and you get hit by it, you accumulate this wealth, this spiritual wealth that lasts forever. It's so powerful. The wealth we get in this world, you get it, and as soon as you get it, you think, how am I going to invest it? Who's going to take it? It's already spent. Isn't it? In 5 seconds. Here's $20 million. I can think it's spent in 5 seconds. It's finished. It's already gone. New temple. fix up the new temple. Bhaktivinoda Thakur Marathon, $10 million. There's $10 million gone right there. But spiritual wealth, you don't lose it. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vishishyate. Krishna's such a perfect source, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever emanates from him doesn't deplete him. He remains complete. And the vibration, the spiritual vibration that comes from Krishna also, is all complete and perfect and so subtle that it gives us this spiritual wealth and clarification. Yadabaso pyudyan kavalita bhava dvanta vibhavo drisham tatvandanam apidishati bhakti pranayinam. Just the transcendental rays of the holy name, even before the sun of the holy name appears, are so powerful, Rupa Goswami says, that even someone who's completely blind to the truth, truth is understanding I'm not my body. I'm not part of this world. I actually have a relationship with the Supreme. None of that. But when they hear the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare, the vibration is so powerful that they awaken. They awaken to the truth. They can actually see and they can experience bhakti in their heart. It's so subtle, the vibration. It's so powerful. So Narada Muni was speaking that kind of vibration. And within the womb, Prahlad Maharaj was absorbing that vibration from Narada Muni, especially because it was meant for him. This is also an important point. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the very first chapter, it is said that Suta Goswami was especially qualified to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because he had received the special mercy of his spiritual masters. They had given him special because he was a gentle soul, because he had approached them in the proper way. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprishnena sevaya. With humility and pridelessness, he had gone before his gurus and he had learned from them. And there's a special quality in the sound vibration when someone has good intent in their heart and they want to give something to a deserving student, they give part of their own heart. They actually give themselves to the person. They give everything they have when they see that there's actually real sincerity and submission and no ulterior motive. And that was the case with Narada Muni. When he was speaking to Prahlad Maharaj, he gave his whole heart. When he was speaking to Prahlad Maharaj within the womb, he gave his whole heart. He was speaking to benefit Prahlad Maharaj within the womb. And because of that, Prahlad Maharaj, when he came into this world, he was a completely enlightened soul. Now, of course, you should say there are different kinds of perfection in this world. There's the Nitya Siddha, eternally perfected soul. And there's the Sadhana Siddha. That means somebody who, through practice of the process of devotional service, comes to the perfect stage. And then there's the Kripa Siddha, or somebody who, by special mercy, like when Jagai Madai got the mercy of Lord Nityananda, they came to the perfect stage. So Srila Prabhupada made an interesting comment about Prahlad Maharaj. Was he a Nitya Siddha or a Sadhana Siddha? And he said he was a mixed Siddha. Both Sadhana Siddha and a Nitya Siddha at the same time. Because he never forgot Krishna. And at the same time, he practiced devotional service. But he never forgot Krishna, ever. That's the quality of a Nitya Siddha. Never forgets Krishna, even from the first day. Always in contact with Krishna. Like we see some of the children being born here. I was just thinking, I was watching the movie that Kishore sent out the other day from the Harinam Sankirtan. And there's Gaura Krishna with a rattle. He's just taking his first steps. And he's in the middle of the kirtan on the street, shaking his rattle in the Hare Krishna. And all the children here, that's what they're born into here, in this little parking lot in the middle of San Jose. They're born into Hare Krishna. That's all they know. From the very beginning, they hear that vibration, and even within the womb. So Prahlad Maharaj was an unusually great soul, an example for the whole universe. Example for generations to come. And Hiranyakashipu, of course, was ecstatic that he had a son, because he thought, I'll train him up to be just like me. And Prabhupada said, that's what all parents think. Even if they're completely miserable and they've worked hard and they hated it, but their son or daughter wants to go off and join a spiritual movement, why would you want to do that? Do what I've done. Take up the course that I've taken up. Because misery loves company. So Hiranyakashipu, he also wanted his son to be a big demon like him. And he was very hopeful for it. He sent him to the best demon school there was. The school of Shukracharya. And his Shukracharya's own sons, Shunda and Amarka, were teaching in that school. And they, from the very beginning, began teaching him all about politics. Politics means the science of polarity, how to see friends and enemies. And that's the opposite of the vision of a devotee. A devotee is described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastani Shuni Chaiva Shupake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. Krishna says an actual learned person looks out at the world and has a feeling of connection to every living entity. And it doesn't matter what body they're in. They can be in the body of a worm. A devotee won't step on a worm because he sees there's a soul there. There's a soul just like me, part and parcel of Krishna. And he sees within the body of a big shot, he sees there's a soul just like me, but he's conditioned in a certain way to think he's a big shot. And within the body of a Brahmin or a cow, he sees equally, and therefore he treats every living entity with respect. Some he respects by keeping a long distance away. And others he respects by coming close and offering his pranams. The intelligence of a devotee, because he sees the soul. And Prahlad Maharaj saw like that from the very beginning. He didn't see the need for having friends and enemies and learning politics in the school of Shunda and Amarka. And he also didn't see the need for material gain, because he understood that what is allotted to us by the Supreme Personality of God, it will come of its own accord. There's no reason to work so hard in this world simply to make a living, because the Lord's already providing everything. The ants all over the world right now as we're speaking are eating just fine. I guarantee you. I've seen it. Anywhere you go in the world, ants eat like kings. And all they need is a little grain of sugar and they'll go crazy. Prabhupada said if an ant finds out there's a grain of sugar on the top of a skyscraper building, he and all his friends will be there in 5 minutes. And who is putting it there? It's Krishna. Because then you look at the elephant, and the elephant has to eat tons and tons of foliage every day so he doesn't feel hungry when he goes to bed. And who provides all that? Krishna. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovididhati kaman. Could everyone please move up by 5.2 inches, please? Don't worry, we're going to get a huge temple. You won't even be able to see the end of it. You'll be looking with binoculars to see where everyone is. I'm not kidding either. So Krishna is providing for everyone. Why should he go to school and learn all these arts for making a living in the material world and try to get ahead like his father? So Prahlad Maharaj wasn't interested. But he stayed in school. He was a 5-year-old boy. He had to. And then his father was very excited to understand what he had learned, because the father becomes so invested in the son, thinking that, you know, he's going to be just like me. And when he brought home, the teachers brought home Prahlad for the first time from school, he wanted to know, what is it that you learned? In fact, tell me the best thing that you found out in your school about politics, and about how to get ahead in the world, how to be just like me. And Prahlad very innocently said, anyone who's taken a household life has entered into a deep, dark well. Confirmed. Such a person is in complete ignorance. And his father, what? That's what you learned in school? And he called the teachers, Shunda and Amarka, and said, what are you doing? You're supposed to teach him about how to be like me. Confirmed again. And the teacher said, somebody must have snuck in, because we didn't do it. We're following the rule book. We're following the curriculum, just like you told us. We taught him everything that, you know, how to be a good demon. And somebody must be sneaking in here. So they were very careful the next time. They brought him back and they taught him very carefully the next time. And they kept a watch out to see that no one was getting in. And later on, they brought Prahlad back to his father. And this time he was very excited again. Please, sit on my lap. What did you learn in school this time? And Prahlad didn't address him as, oh, my dear father. He said, oh, my dear best of the demons. I've learned that anyone who's taken a vow to stay in this material world certainly cannot be taught anything useful. And his father again became furious. And called the teachers again and chastised them. They said, no, it's not us. There's something wrong with your boy. He's just like that. We don't know how. So they took him back again, and very intensively they tried to reform him and bring him to the point of view of their father and their the curriculum of their school. But still, when they brought him back for the third time to his father, and this time his father was anxious because he thought, this boy's incorrigible. What's he going to say now? But Prahlad came in and bowed to the feet of his father. He touched his foot, and his father thought, okay, finally, something. Sit up here. Tell me what you learned. And Prahlad said, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. All these nine methods are the direct way to worship Vishnu. And Hiranyakashipu, Vishnu, not my son. And now he had lost all composure. He said, kill this boy. He's of no use to me. I brought him into the world to train him to be a good demon. And now he's become completely contaminated by this idea of God. So they tried to kill him. They actually poisoned him. But the poison didn't take effect. They threw him from a high peak. And Krishna, each time, protected him. Under the feet of elephants, Krishna protected him again. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Shri Prambhavati Dharma Atma Shashvash Chantim Nagachati Konteya Pratijanihi Nami Bhakti Pranashati. He told Arjuna, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. And he told Arjuna, because Krishna is so attached to his devotees, that sometimes he'll even make a promise and he'll break it for the sake of his devotee. But this time he told Arjuna, you declare it, because if my devotee says that I will always protect my devotee, then I'll always protect my devotee, because my devotee said it. And he protected Prahlad Maharaj through all kinds of extreme torture from his father. And throughout the whole ordeal, he was being tortured by his father. He tried to kill him, his own father, and he was just a five-year-old boy. And Prahlad Maharaj never stopped thinking of Krishna and chanting his mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And as we follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, this is another lesson that we must never stop chanting the Lord's name. We must never stop thinking of him in any condition of life. Suke duke bulo nako varane harinam bolore. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the same advice. Happiness and distress. And how bad can it get in the material world? It can get really bad. It can get so bad that you can be incapacitated. You can lose the functions of your body and still be conscious. You can have a stroke. A vein in your head can pop, and the blood from that will obstruct the nervous system so that you cannot function. You can't walk. You can't eat. You can't take care of yourself in any way, but you're still conscious. That's how bad it can get. And it will get so bad at the time of death that a fire will come and consume our body and we'll have to leave the body. That's how bad it gets in the material world. Krishna is telling us over and over again in the Bhagavad Gita, this material world, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, it's a place of misery. Don't try to find happiness here. Try to get out. This world's for our reflection so we can get out. And the Shastra's there telling us, don't stay in the house. And out of illusion, I'm thinking, the house is burning. Someone comes and tells me, the house is burning. And I say, it's not that hot. It'll get worse. Suke duke. We think that, oh, it's just a quaint song. Suke duke. Bulonako. But how bad can it get? It can get so bad that we can be lost in the material ocean and forced to suffer like a dog I saw today, I was waiting for Nirkula. She had to rent a car. And I was waiting for her outside. And I saw two people. One walked by. I actually wrote it down. I'm going to read it to you. Otherwise, you won't believe me. I saw a young man walk by, and I just observed him. And he was wearing a T-shirt. And it had a picture of a big dog on it. I think it was a pit bull. And it had a collar that had spikes on it. And it said, "Rude Dogs." And then about 30 seconds later, an older man walked by the other direction, and he had a T-shirt on, and it had a picture of dogs playing cards, and it said, "Bad Dogs, Play to Win." And they were playing cards. And I was thinking, I mean, this is dog mentality. Bad dog. Rude dog. Dog, 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 everywhere you go. I mean, and oftentimes people would come to Prabhupada, even students from the university, and he would be telling them about the process of extricating themselves from this world and going back to the spiritual world, and the problems of birth, death, old age, and disease, and suffering like the animals, like the dog. And a so-called perfectly educated university student would say to him, "What's wrong with being a dog? Sounds okay to me. This is the height of ignorance." So, we must understand that this material world is a place of extreme suffering, and that one way or another we will be subjected to it. And happiness also. So-called happiness in the material world. It will come of its own accord. And that may be also, I wrote something else down. I saw a bumper sticker on the way here too. Don't mind, but I'm going to read it to you. It said, "Seek constant distraction." That's what it said on the bumper sticker of a car. It said, "Seek constant distraction." And I thought, I really don't have to seek it. It sought me. It found me somehow. But this is, there are distractions here that can become so severe in the form of pain and in the form of pleasure also. This, the Yoga Sutra says, the pleasure of this material world, when you get some little pleasure, it registers in your mind. It's not real. Yehi sam sparshaja bhoka dukkha yonai evate adyantavanta konteya na teshu ramate buddha. Krishna says an intelligent person doesn't take it to be real, the happiness that you get from the senses in the material world, because it has a beginning and an end. You have to, it has an ending point. So it's not real happiness, but still it registers in the mind, and the mind gets a memory of it. And then every time you see that same kind of pleasure, even if it's detrimental to your health or your well-being or your standing in society, your mind will say, "Go do it again." "No, no, I can't do that." "No, no, go do it again." The bad master of the mind. It becomes affected by the so-called pleasure of the material world. And it forces us. And Krishna says this mechanism of being attached to happiness and distress in this world is what forces us by varied consciousness to take all kinds of different births in this world. Shariram yadavapnoti yachchap yukramatishvara. Grihit vaitani samyati vayur gandam ivashayat. Just like the air, when it crosses over a substance, it takes on the flavor, it takes on the smell, and our consciousness too. In contact with the varieties of this temporary material world and the modalities of goodness, passion, and ignorance, it becomes affected. And that is what determines our future in this world, in good and bad. Purusha prakritistohi Bhunkte prakriti jangunan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. Because of our association with the modes of material nature, we get good and bad in this material world. So Prahlad Maharaj showed us by his example, and it was an extreme example, that no matter what happens, in whatever situation we're in, we must continue to remember Krishna. especially by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And when we do that, Krishna is personally present. And Prahlad proved that also. In fact, Lord Nrsimhadev proved it. Because when Hiranyakashipu told his teachers to kill Prahlad and they were unsuccessful, he brought Prahlad into his own palace and challenged him. He was so furious. His own son. He was so disturbed by the fact that Prahlad was a devotee of Krishna that he wanted to kill him. This is the demoniac heart. So he challenged Prahlad. He said, you're always talking about Vishnu. So where is he? And Prahlad said, he's everywhere. And someone told me the other day in South India, there's a saying, from stick to stumba. Is that true? Have you ever heard that? Well, I guess it wasn't South India then, if you haven't heard about it. From stick to stumba, that means everywhere, in every stick and every stumba. Huh? It means it's all pervasive. Have you heard it? It must be really old or something. Stick to stumba? Stumba. Stick to stumba. Every stick, every stumba. They say this, as somebody was pointing out to me, that it's built into the culture to be Krishna conscious in India as you grow up. And it, stick to stumba, really is referring to the same idea that Prahlad was telling his father. Ekopyasora charitum jagaranda kotim yach chakti rasti jagaranda chayayaranta. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. That Krishna, Brahma says, Krishna's there within every atom. He's there everywhere. And Prahlad Maharaj could see him because this is the nature of the topmost devotee. The topmost devotee sees Krishna everywhere he looks. He doesn't see anything else but Krishna in everything. So Prahlad Maharaj honestly answered his father when his father said, is he in this pillar of the palace? And Prahlad said, yes, he is, because he could see him there. And Hiranyakashipu then said, then I'll kill him. And as he went to pulverize the pillar, the sound of Lord Nrsimhadev's roar emanated from the pillar throughout the entire palace, throughout the entire universe. And elephants began running away in fear. Everyone began to cower at this sound. Imagine the pillar. That shrill sound first came from the pillar. Actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada says, before we see God, we actually hear him. We hear God first. And this is actually the Vedic science. Stotriyam Brahmanishtam. Who is, in fact, describing who's a teacher, who's a guru in Vedic wisdom. Tad vignanartam sa gurum eva bigachet. Samit pani sotriyam brahmanishtam. It's someone who's carried wood for their spiritual master. They've done some sacrifice. They've sacrificed their life. They've made their mission, their spiritual master mission, their mission. They do some heavy lifting for their guru. And they hear, shotriyam. It means they hear, they've heard. That's what they listen to. They don't listen to anything else. They only let that sound vibration come in, what came through the disciplic succession. Otherwise, they don't care for it. I wrote this piece one day. I was walking down the street in Burlingame, and I saw by the sewer drain, it said, no dumping drains to bay. Everything you dump in Burlingame goes in the San Francisco Bay. And all over the Bay Area, we all live downstream. There's a bumper sticker like that. We all live downstream. So the sound vibration that one hears, it goes in the ear, just like in those drains, they drain to the bay. Everything that goes in the ear, it drains to the heart. And it ends up there. And if you don't think that's true, I can give you personal testimony that I can remember songs from TV commercials from when I was 5 years old. And I won't sing them now. But they're in there somewhere. They go in. And who knows at the time of death, when we're leaving this body, Krishna says, yang yang vapi smaran bhavam tajatyante kalevaram. Tam tam evaite konteya sadatad bhava bhavita. Whatever you remember at the time of death, whatever comes up for you as a memory, that's what state you're going to attain without fail, he says. So this is the important science of hearing. Stotriyam brahmanishtam. And if you hear properly, you become fixed, brahmanishtam. Nishtam means fixed in Brahman. You have no other interest in life, no other interest in the variety of the material world. So that sound of Lord Nrisimhadev's roar, and then his laughter, the laughter of Lord Nrisimhadev before he was going to tear apart this demon. Can you imagine the sound of that? Later, Prahlad Maharaj, after Hiranyakashipu had been killed, he remembered this, and he was saying in his prayers that, I wasn't afraid of that. He said, I wasn't afraid of your huge pinching teeth and your wedge-like ears, Shanku Karnan, or your garland of intestines. What a ghastly scene. Prabhupada mentions this. He says, ordinarily this would be something so ghastly. And then the son is standing there saying, oh, very good, very good. His father's just been torn apart and he's wearing the garland of intestines. And the boy is saying, oh, very good killer, Prabhupada said. Thank you. But because it's transcendental. When the Lord kills, he liberates. He brings the highest benefit. So Prahlad Maharaj said, I'm not afraid of that scene at all. I wasn't afraid, and I'm not afraid now. And I'm not afraid of your shrill laughter and the roaring sound that scared everyone else in the universe. He said, but what I am afraid of is the turning wheel of birth and death and karma in this material world. He said, I'm very much afraid of forgetting you even for a second and falling back down into this wheel of birth and death in the material world. That I'm afraid of. Lord Nrisimhadev burst from the pillar and he was so angry because he is the lover of his devotee. He's Bhaktivatsal. And here was the purest devotee who was being harassed by this demon. And Hiranyakashipu came after him. And they fought. And Nrisimhadev, with his nails, was fighting. He grabbed Hiranyakashipu. But then Hiranyakashipu slipped from his grip. And the demigods were watching this fight. And remember, they had been subjugated to the rule of Hiranyakashipu. He was making everyone cower. And they were watching, hoping that he would be killed very quickly. And they knew that he knew that they were watching. And so when Hiranyakashipu slipped from the grip of Lord Nrisimhadev, they all thought, uh-oh, now we're really going to get it. Because we were egging him on and saying, you know, win, you know, kill him. And now he's really going to take revenge on us. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this was just Lord Nrisimhadev playing with Hiranyakashipu. And he said, this happens in this world too. Sometimes we hear, a devotee might say, but look, the materialists, they're doing fine. They have so many nice facilities for happiness, and they don't seem to be disturbed at all. But he said, that's the interim. The same interim that was there when Hiranyakashipu slipped from the grip of Lord Nrisimhadev and then was caught again. And when he caught him, he took him on his lap, which is either land nor sea. He brought him to the threshold of the house, which is neither outside or inside. He timed it perfectly so it wasn't day or night, it was twilight. He used no weapons because he only used his nails. And he tore that demon apart. There's a wonderful deity of Lord Nrsingadev right at the tip of Govardhan Hill. When you leave the ashram at about 5:15 in the morning, you walk down past Anior, and you go through the beautiful area right before the tip of the tail of Govardhan. There's an old Nrsingadev temple. And if you go inside, sometimes there's an old pujari in there also. So sometimes you have to yell and bang on the door until he opens it. And if you go up and you can, right when the sun's coming up, you can sing prayers to Lord Nrsingadev. He has some old kartals that he keeps under a little bench. They're huge kartals. And you can sit in there and you can sing to Lord Nrsingadev. And then Lord Nrsingadev's usually wearing some kind of a dress, some outfit. But in the dark, he'll lift up that dress and hold the lamp close. And there on top, you can see that he's tearing Hiranyakashipu. And right underneath the dress, you'll see Prahlad standing right by his leg like this when he lifts up. And he puts the lamp very close. It's very the most transcendental experience, coming in to see Lord Nrsingadev there. And Prahlad Maharaj, when you lift up, he's there. So Prahlad Maharaj stood back while all the demigods came forward. And they wanted to appease the Lord. So they offered all kinds of prayers, and everyone came forward and offered beautiful prayers in perfect Sanskrit. But Lord Nrsingadev was not pacified. He was still angry. He was still roaring. And then they pushed Prahlad Maharaj forward. They said, "You try." Prabhupada said, "It's like pushing a 5-year-old child into the cage of a lion." So Prahlad Maharaj came before Lord Nrsingadev. And the first thing he said was, "The demigods come from the highest families. And they also know perfect Sanskrit. And they've just offered you the choicest kinds of prayers. But you're not happy. I'm a little boy. I don't know Sanskrit. I come from a demoniac family. I was born in the womb of a demoniac mother, the wife of Hiranyakashipu, the biggest demon in the universe. What can I offer you in the way of prayer?" And as he was speaking those words, he said, "Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutapaya." He remembered Gajendra, the elephant. Gajendra was an elephant. He was an animal. But because he was sincere and he offered prayers to the Lord accepted them. And Gajendra is celebrated as a great devotee. He was liberated personally by the Lord who came to save him because of his prayers. Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutapaya. It doesn't matter what position of life we're in now. It doesn't matter what background we come from. Because Gajendra was an animal, an elephant. Hanuman, monkey. But he's the most celebrated servitor of Lord Ram. Jatayu, a vulture. But when we read the pastime of Jatayu, we cry. Because of he didn't even win when he fought with Ravana. He didn't win, apparently. Ravana overpowered him. When he stole Sita and he left that ashram, Jatayu was old and he was tired. But he had so much bhakti that he rose to the occasion. And he challenged Ravana, the most powerful demon, and he said, "Put Sita down, give her back to Ram, or I'll kill you." And Ravana just laughed. He was flying on his powerful airplane, and he had unlimited strength. He had beaten already the greatest demigods. And now here's this old bird challenging him to a fight. And they fought. And he brought down the airplane. And he scratched and he battered Ravana with his wings. And his wings were then cut off. Finally, he fell to the ground in a heap, dying on the ground. And Ravana got away. But Jatayu is celebrated as the great devotee who tried to save Sita from Ram. And Ram and Lakshman did his last rites personally out of gratitude. So Prahlad Maharaj was thinking like this. Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gaja yutapaya. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter I'm a child. It doesn't matter if you're an animal, if you're a bird. Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the vision of a pure devotee. He says even a worm can become a pure devotee if he follows the process given through parampara. Even a worm. Who would say something like that? That a worm can become a pure devotee? Only someone who knows the full potential of the holy name. The full potential of bhakti. And that's what Prahlad Maharaj had. He knew the full strength of bhakti. He was a pure devotee. And he could see Krishna everywhere. Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gaja yutapaya. Krishna was satisfied by an elephant who offered prayers through his trunk. What did it sound like when Gajendra offered prayers through his trunk? But they were so sincere, and it was so much from his heart that the Lord appeared personally and saved Gajendra. So Prahlad Maharaj said, and we are following in his footsteps, if you are just sincere and you offer prayers to the Lord will accept it. And he did. Prahlad Maharaj stood before the Lord and he offered prayers which are unsurpassed throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can read those prayers. You can take your PhD thesis on those prayers. And you can take your PhD thesis on one of those prayers within Prahlad Maharaj's beautiful prayers. He's a 5-year-old boy. And by the mercy of Lord Nrisingadev, he offered such prayers. And we can read them over and over and over again. And we have. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he heard the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj hundreds of times from the mouth of Gadadhar Pandit. Why? Because of the quality of pure devotion in the heart of Prahlad Maharaj, who is tested by his father. He never gave up thinking of Krishna, not even for a second. He wouldn't trade it in, and he was offered everything too. Prabhupada used to note this about his own devotees, like Giriraj Maharaj, comes from a very wealthy family. He was living in Juhu, and you know, before Juhu was Hare Krishna land and a big fancy temple and a big fancy restaurant that's a big success in the world. You know what it was? It was a mud pit with mosquitoes and squatters who wouldn't leave the land. And Prabhupada had gone by that property years before, and he promised Krishna that I'm going to get that property for you right in this area, and I'm going to worship you here. And later he came back and bought that property. The devotees were cheated. There was a shady land deal. There was a fight that went on for years over that land. And even when the devotees moved on, there were squatters there that didn't have to leave by Indian law. And even one time, there was a huge attack on the temple. And devotees were thrown in jail to defend that property. There's a whole history behind that place. But they stayed there and they kept that property. And now it's become this worshipable place. So Prahlad Maharaj is showing us, Giriraj Maharaj stayed there throughout as a brahmachari and defended that property for Prabhupada with others. And he comes from a very wealthy family. So his father came and he said, just come away from this mess, from this, you know, fanatical Krishna consciousness, and I'll give you $2 million. And that actually, believe it or not, that used to be a lot of money. That used to be a huge amount of money, $2 million. And he said, just come away. We'll set up a bank account, $2 million. You can do whatever you want as long as it's not this. And Giri Rajmar said, no thanks. I'm with Prabhupada. I'm sitting here in this mud pit with mosquitoes defending Krishna. I'm staying. And he did. That's devotional service. You don't give up. You never give up. You never forget Krishna. And it doesn't matter what happens. This was Prahlad Maharaj. This is why he is the greatest devotee. Because he was tested. It's not just a story that his father tried to kill him. His father actually tried to kill him. He tortured him. And Prahlad Maharaj would not give up chanting Hare Krishna. He would not give up. This is our legacy. This is the line we come in. And what did Prahlad Maharaj ask for? After Hiranyakashipu, his demoniac father, was killed, and Lord Nrisingadev Bhagavan, the supreme opulent personality of God, had offered him anything in the world. He said, please benefit my father. That's all I ask. I don't want anything for myself. Because I'm not a merchant. I'm not serving you for any return. I'm not a vanik. Just save my father. And in his prayers, over and over again, Prahlad Maharaj says, I don't want to go to the forest. I don't want to go to a cave. I don't care what kind of secret mantras or practices of silence that other people do to try to understand God within their heart. Because what I want to do is live within the densest city in the world so that I can do benefit for others. This is the heart of a pure devotee. And Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, Atmaupam Yena Sarvatra. He said, the actually advanced yogi is one who has compassion for others, one who empathizes with other living beings in both their happiness and distress, and wants to do good for them. And that's Prahlad Maharaj. That is our line. That's what this is the line we come in. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur moved his biggest temple into Calcutta. And everyone said, why are you moving out of the holy dham into the horrid city of Calcutta? And he said, because that's where all the people are. And he took his stand in all the most populated places. And that's our legacy. And that was Srila Prabhupada. He came to New York City and lived like a homeless person for a year. A swan-like Paramahamsa who came and lived in New York City, in the Bowery, with drunk people, with dead people on the street, with no money. Why? To benefit others. That's Prahlad Maharaj. We are in that line. That is our program. We follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. We continue to chant Hare Krishna, no matter what the vicissitudes of this world. And in the meantime, our only business is to spread this knowledge to others who don't have it. And by doing so, we also become enlightened. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no servant in this world more dear to me than the person who sacrifices their own interests in life to give the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to others. He said there's no one more dear. That's Krishna speaking himself. And when pressed to take a benediction for himself by Lord Nrisingadev, Prahlad Maharaj said, if you give me any benediction at all, I ask that there be no material desire from within the core of my heart. That is the only desire of a pure devotee, to have no desire for oneself, only that for Krishna, service for service. No motive. So today we're celebrating Prahlad Maharaj. because he brought Lord Nisringadev. Just as Advaita Acharya brought Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to this world through his pure devotion and his loud cries. The pure devotion of Prahlad Maharaj attracted Lord Nisringadev. And it's a symbol of what the power of pure devotional service is. And the juxtaposition of Hiranyakashipu's endeavor to get everything in this world and then losing it in a second. And the appearance of Lord Nisringadev proves that the only thing of value in this world is actually taking shelter of Krishna. So we follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. We follow his process, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. These direct methods of connecting to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has appeared on this day as Lord Nisringadev. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tattvata. Anyone who knows about this truth, Avatar Kata, Prabhupada calls it in the purport that we were reading. Avatar Kata. Avatar means someone who comes from beyond our dimension, into our dimension for our benefit. That's what an avatar is. Someone who can't understand what an avatar is like a frog in a well, who when someone else, his fellow frog, catches a ride on a bullock cart and happens to drive by Half Moon Bay, and then he comes back to the well, and then the frog says, "Where'd you go?" And he said, "I saw the biggest well could have ever imagined." And he said, "What is it, 2 times bigger than my well?" And he said, "No, much bigger. 4 times bigger? Much bigger. Impossible." That's the mentality of the frog in the well in this world, not understanding the avatar. But those who are devotees, those who follow the devotees, those who get association with devotees, they can understand. Janma karma cha me divyam. Krishna's appearance in this world is divine. It's from beyond this world. And that the sound of Krishna's names, Golokera Premadhan Harinam Sankirtan, it's coming down. It's an avatar. And the devotees who distribute the holy name to others, they can see it for themselves. That's the benefit of distributing it. You get to see it firsthand. You get a first front row seat to watch how the holy name affects people. You try to give it to them. Please chant Hare Krishna. They smile, they laugh, they chant, and something just happened. They have no idea what it is. But we have some idea from reading the Shastra and chanting it ourselves. And then other people, we say, chant this mantra, and they say, "No way. I'm not doing it." Why? I don't know what's going to happen when I do. What's in this mantra? You have no idea. We have no idea what's in the mantra. Krishna's in the mantra. So that's our celebration today, that Krishna has appeared. He's made his avatar into this world, and he's done it for the sake of his devotee Prahlad Maharaj. Those who follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj by remembering Krishna under all circumstances, by becoming the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. This was Prahlad Maharaj's mood in his prayers. He never said, "I worship Krishna directly." Never. When he prayed to Lord Nisringadev, he said, "I want to serve your servant. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant." And the more times removed, this is the mystery of Vaishnavism. That's why we call it Vaishnavism, because we worship Vaishnavs. And the more times removed, the more Krishna is pleased. The more we become servant of the servant of the servant servant. That's following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. We're so fortunate that we're here today to celebrate the appearance of Lord Nisringadev and to follow in the footsteps of Sri Prahlad Maharaj. Gaur Premanande! Sri Prahlad Maharaj ki!
Jai!
Sri Nisringadev ki!
Jai!
And I was also thinking today that the very appearance day of Lord Nisringadev is the disappearance day of Hiranyakashipu. Haribo! When can you say that it happens simultaneously? I was thinking, when's the disappearance day and appearance day happen all in the same time? And, you know, that's a good thing. So we have a lot to celebrate today. So what we're going to do is we're going to follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj by chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And everyone will be able to fit in here now, believe it or not, because we're going to stand up. Now, generally, you know, to keep some order, we ask all the women, take this whole left-hand side to stand before the Lord so that you can get up close and see. And the men will stay on this side. And then we'll have the kirtan party will chant right back here. So everyone that's in front won't have an obstructed view. They can see the Lord. And then, so we'll chant to the Lord for his satisfaction in Artik. And then just after that, we're going to sing special prayers to Lord Nrsingadev. And we have one other bhajan that we're going to do. And then after that, we have a prasadam feast. Many of the devotees have been fasting today to honor the appearance day of Lord Nrsingadev. And you can break fast pretty much around now, because it's right now is twilight. This is right around the time that it happened, that he tore him apart. So let's remember that when we're chanting, that he tore apart this great demon, Hiranyakashipu. And then after we sing, everyone will come take prasadam. Does that sound like a good deal? Okay. Hare Krishna. Go Premanande Haribo. Hare Krishna.